The U.S. border with Mexico is a constant source of tension in both politics and international relations because it is a constant source of people who want to come into the United States to live better lives than they've had further south. Child arrivals at the border hit a record high last month. This hour, we go back a bit to the children in cages period of a few years ago. Stories told by those children ended up in a book, Hear My Voice in English and Flip It Over, Escucha Mi Voz en Español. It is a big and colorful book, like a children's book, with lots of artwork, but it's a message that should resonate with adult readers as well. The book does list an author, or not list an author, rather a compiled by, that is Warren Binford, who is joined on our program today by Michael Garcia Bohenick. Warren Binford is a children's rights scholar and advocate and professor of law at Willamette University in Salem. She's the founder of Project Amplify, putting the voices of children out to the world. Warren Binford, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
And Michael Bohenick is senior counsel in the Children's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. He wrote the foreword to the book. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Good to have you both here. So, Warren, talk about the creation of Project Amplify and the book. I mean, they pretty much come together, don't they?
Yes, they sure do. I mean, basically, this book was born out of experiences that Michael and I had working together on the U.S.'s southern border. We first encountered a number of these children in a facility in 2017, which was concerning. But when we returned there a few months later, it was much worse. That there were a lot of children who were sick. They were not receiving the health care that they needed and that their mothers were trying to advocate for. And we shared our concerns with the people who were running that facility, found out that a lot of people had been purged, new people had been brought in, and there seemed to be a major shift in management that was increasingly cruel and neglectful of the children. We went on to other facilities across the border over the next couple of years, and in facility after facility, we saw what was nothing less than systemic abuse and neglect of these children until finally we walked into the Clint Border Patrol facility in June 2019 and discovered over 350 children who were being kept in a warehouse, a loading dock, tents in the desert, and overcrowded jail cells. And we were so horrified by what we saw, especially because seven children had died in the year leading up to our arrival at Clint. And it was the first time in 10 years that a single child had died in U.S. custody or shortly after being released, that we were afraid that more children would die. And that's when we decided to go public and let the American people know what was being done to these children with taxpayer money, you know, in the name of the American people. And that led to initiatives like this book to get the children's own words, their stories out there so that the children would stop being politicized and people would know that what we were doing to these children was inhumane and needed to stop.
It's all of a piece, you know, Hear My Voice and then Project Amplify to amplify that voice. But Michael, in the foreword to the book, you describe just having difficulty getting the kids to speak to you at all.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think it's unusual in my experience for children not to want to talk to adults who are interested in them, who, you know, I'm speaking here about kids who have been on their own for a considerable period of time and are really looking to adults to provide solutions and get them to a place of safety. So for the most part, whenever I go around the world in prisons, in immigration detention centers, in other contexts where kids are really in need of care and protection, they are pretty quick to tell me exactly what they need and give me their pretty clear views on what can be changed for the better. What's really striking about the kinds of interviews Warren and I were doing in Clint and in some of these other immigration detention cells was that kids had really reverted to some coping mechanisms that really showed signs of serious trauma. So not talking is one of them. This kind of mutism or selective mutism is something that I've only seen a few other times, always in immigration detention settings, but only in the most extreme of those kinds of things. Other kids, those who were talking, would describe having mood swings they couldn't understand, older kids telling me they felt angry at their parents or other people they knew, even though they knew intellectually that this was no fault of anybody's but the government's. A lot of really, really difficult stories and just it was a really difficult time watching them trying to get out the details of what happened to them and when.
So you have this information ultimately that you got from them once they did speak up, but then why warrant a children's book?
Well, basically what had happened is that, you know, Michael and I and the other people on our team had gathered the testimonies, sworn testimonies of the children about what their experiences were at this facility to provide to a federal court who was overseeing the facilities and trying to make sure that the facilities were respecting the children's rights. And as we've already said, on a widespread basis, they were not. And so we provided these testimonies, to the lawyers in that court case. And we also made them available online because when Michael and I went to the American public, when we went to the media and reported what we were seeing and how it was worsening across the years that we were doing these visits, the highest levels of the federal government tried to deny the story, tried to say that none of this is true. Literally, it was called fake news. Vice President Pence was put on Air Force Two, was sent down to a facility where another team of ours was the week before, and literally they had cleaned these kids up and put them in sweats that we recognized from another facility that wasn't too far away that we visited as well. So we recognized exactly the clothes that they put these kids in. The kids the previous week had not been wearing those clothes, and they tried to say that, you know, these kids were actually quite happy and being well taken care of, and they were glad to be there, and none of it was true. And I realized that, you know, how do you counter the highest levels of the U.S. federal government trying to deny the existence and reality of what was happening to these children? And I felt like the only way we can do this is to give people access to the children's own words, their testimonies. And so we created Project Amplify, and we put the children's testimonies up on the website, and immediately I heard from so many people that said, I can't read them, they're too sad, they're too overwhelming.
So I'm kind of speed you up because I have a break coming, but so the children's book actually gave it a more palatable way
exactly.
to receive it?
Yes, so we asked creative people in society, we asked the illustrators, we asked artists, we asked musicians to please have the courage to read the children's stories and find ways to make them more accessible to the American public,
okay.
And that's where this children's book came from.
Back with Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz, in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guests are Warren Binford and Michael Garcia Bohenik, both advocates for children's rights and legal rights generally. Warren Binford is a professor of law at Willamette University in Salem and the founder of Project Amplify, putting the voices of children in tough immigration situations out to the world. Michael Garcia Bohenik, senior counsel in the Children's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. They are both participants in a book called Hear My Voice, compiled by Warren Binford for Project Amplify. It looks like a children's book. It is stories of children in the Children in Cages period of a couple of years ago at the southern border. It is also in Spanish. Flip it over, and it's called Escucha Mi Voz. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we explore the issues of immigration and the treatment of unaccompanied children, big issue now and then. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Let's deal with current events. 19,000 children and teens unaccompanied arriving at the border in March of this year, 2021, most in a month ever. Michael, what is happening and why?
Well, I think what we're seeing is a combination of factors that each one individually would have been a logistical challenge, but wouldn't have been nearly the kind of compound challenge that the administration, that the government is facing right now. The first one is, the first reality is that the Trump administration closed the borders to anybody seeking safety, seeking asylum, including anybody who was a child, unaccompanied, or with family. And so there's that a portion of that policy was reversed by the Biden administration in that unaccompanied kids are now let in and allowed to pursue their asylum claims from within the U.S. while waiting with family members. Having the borders effectively closed and giving border agents the possibility of summarily turning people away, summary expulsions with no due process, for 12 months or so, 11 months, meant that a lot of people who would have entered over the course of that period were not able to. And so what we're seeing is a bit of a delayed reaction. The other thing is that we always see a rise in migration, including child arrivals in the spring. There's various factors that have to do with weather, that have to do with other elements of the annual timetable. That just means that the numbers are always a bit higher now than in other parts of the year. And I think the final reality is just that the circumstances in home countries, the situations of profound insecurity, of direct threats to life and safety, have not changed, and if anything, they've gotten worse. And so in the absence of regular ways for people to come and seek safety, it's not unexpected that people will enter without authorization. And I guess the final question is, so why kids are arriving? And I can't tell you the number of times I've talked to families who have said to me, if all other things, we're making the best choice we can in the circumstances we have. If we can't get out, at least we can try to make sure that one of our children has a future. And that's part of what is going on here.
Wow. So a lot of, as you mentioned, a compound challenge. Now, Warren Binford, are they being treated any better than they were back at, for example, at the Clinton border station in June of 2019?
Well, I think a major disappointment in recent times is that we've witnessed changing demographics. When you talk about 19,000 children arriving in 1 month, that's only 1% or a little over 1% of some of the total numbers that we've seen in years past. In 2000, we had 1.6 million people arriving, 1985. So in recent decades, in 1985, we had the same number. So in recent decades, we have seen far more people arriving than what we've seen in recent years. But what has changed over the last decade is the increase in children, and yet none of the administrations have really adapted to the fact that we are seeing and will continue to see more children arriving at the border. And so we are seeing a quicker release of the children under the Biden administration than we saw under the Trump administration. But the fact is that the border management policies and procedures have not yet been changed to a reception, identification, and reunification operation, which is what children who arrive to the United States need. Approximately 89% of these children have family or other loved ones in the United States who are here, available, and willing to take care of them. So these children don't need to be in these facilities for any longer than, you know, a few days or a couple of weeks at most while they're being received, identified, and reunified, you know, with their loved ones in the United States. And that's what the Biden administration is trying to implement. But because none of the other administrations have started the process to adapt border management policies and procedures to the changing demographic realities, some of the children are in the same types of facilities that they were before, but they're being released much more quickly at the same time that this administration is trying to modernize, you know, our border management policies.
We are talking to children's rights advocates Warren Binford and Michael Garcia Bohenik here on the Jefferson Exchange. Warren is the compiler of the book Escucha Mi Voz, Hear My Voice. So the first story in the book is from a child in Honduras who talks about her grandfather saw a gang kill our neighbor. Stories like that, are they rare or are they common?
Oh, they're quite common. you know, when we, Michael and I have interviewed, you know, not just the children, but we've gone to some of the facilities and interviewed parents who had been separated from their children after they arrived to the United States. And it's very common for both the children and the parents to report, you know, life-threatening experiences with criminal cartels and gangs. You know, we've talked to mothers who have had daughters who have been, you know, amputated, beheaded, gang raped, and they're trying to get their other children away because the girl children won't agree to be sex slaves, essentially, you know, to the gang members. And so it's not uncommon for people to know how violent these and vicious these gangs and criminal cartels are. And when they incidentally witness a murder on a lake early morning when a fisherman, you know, is out fishing to feed his family, and they know that they've witnessed, that dad has witnessed something that he shouldn't, they know they need to leave because they know that their family at that point is at the threat of death.
All right, so leaving a horrible situation, and Michael, you talked about the choice made that if one of our kids can get out, that would be better than none. But then the conditions go on for several pages in Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz, grim conditions, tight confinement, meals not great, hygiene sort of subpar at best. I mean, so what are the things, I mean, is there international law that governs the kinds of things that are supposed to be offered to refugees or people in these situations?
Well, there's definitely a whole series of international standards that the United States played a key role in developing and parallel in many respects the requirements of U.S. law. One of the challenges that we face legally in the U.S. is that the government has never incorporated into law or into written rules, binding rules, the basic standards that we would expect of any place that would hold kids or adults. And so we ended up in the preposterous position of having a U.S. government attorney argue in federal court that toothbrushes and toothpaste weren't part of a sanitary system of detention, that they could detain kids without providing those things. So one need is obviously to write these rules into something that has the force of law, and make sure that there's real accountability for failing to follow them. Another thing is that what we've been talking about is really the first stage at which the first contact point that people have with the immigration system. And what's supposed to happen with children who are unaccompanied is that they're supposed to go really quickly to a totally different department, not run by Homeland Security, not part of ICE, not part of the Border Agency, but is run by Health and Human Services, designed specifically to care for them. And what we're seeing now are delays in the transfer, that is, for whatever reason or reasons, the Department of Health and Human Services isn't moving quickly to reunite children with relatives in the U.S., has been flummoxed by the numbers, even though to a certain extent an increase in numbers was foreseeable. And because it's not freeing up its beds fast enough, kids are staying longer and longer in those initial detention cells, which were never designed for children in the first place.
So I know the Biden administration had run afoul of the, you know, 72 hours maximum holding time. Do you have a recent average?
I don't know that it's possible to speak of averages, except to say that it's certainly a lot longer than 72 hours. The 72-hour rule has never been, it's an agency rule that the agency has never enforced. It's never held itself accountable for. And so Border Patrol holding cells routinely hold children and other people who should never be in these kinds of settings for periods that far exceed them. We've been hearing reports of children in these kinds of settings for a week or more, which is getting to the kind of time frame that we were hearing when Warren and I were in Clint a couple of years ago. So while we can't speak right now about the exact time frame or an average time frame that children are detained for, we know that it's far, far, far too long.
Michael Garcia Bohannock and Warren Binford are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about children arriving at the southern border of the United States. Warren Binford and Michael Garcia Bohannock are both children's rights advocates and attorneys, and Warren Binford is the compiler of a book that looks for all the world like a children's book, but it's tough stuff to take because it's about testimonies of children detained at the southern border. The book is called Hear My Voice in English. Flip it over and it's Escucha Mi Voz en Español. You can join the conversation about this issue on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Warren, there always have been and may always be people, and they include the former President Trump and former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who essentially said, if you don't like it, don't cross the border. And what do you say back?
Well, I mean, I think that that is an unrealistic view that has contributed to us being in the situation that we are today. You know, I am, a famously moderate person who comes from a purple family. I'm not an open borders advocate. I absolutely recognize both that immigrants overall, by every reputable study, have been shown to be a net asset to our society, that they give far more than they take. But I also understand that society needs a certain amount of stability, and so immigration needs to be at sustainable levels. I absolutely believe that we are a nation of laws and that we need to follow our laws, and it is absolutely perfectly lawful for a child to come to the United States for the purpose of seeking asylum and be placed with their family or other loved ones and to be treated humanely while their legal claim to remain in the United States is being heard. And so when President Trump or former President Trump or former Attorney General Jeff Sessions says, don't come if you don't like it, I say, you are the Attorney General and the President of the United States. You need to obey the law. These children have a right to come here and present their claims, and you have a legal obligation to respect their rights and treat them humanely. If it turns out that the courts determine that they don't have a lawful basis for being here, and many, many of these children are proved to have a lawful basis for being here, then you have a legal obligation to treat them humanely while they're being returned and reunified with their families in their home countries. But either way, it's the responsibility of the President of the United States, regardless if it's President Obama or Trump or President Biden, to respect the law of the United States and to respect the international laws that they helped to develop, that the United States helped to develop, and to respect these children's rights to come here, present their claims, and be treated humanely during that process.
Warren, by the time I got to the pages on an 8-year-old taking care of a 4-year-old, I had to wonder, are these just verbatim stories or some of these people composites? I mean, what did you do to construct these here or convey them?
So basically what we did was we created a single mosaic narrative from the sworn declarations of 61 children whom we interviewed. And then, we reached out to children's book illustrators and said, please read these thematic, read the children's declarations, read these thematic passages that we've created, and tell us which of these you feel called to illustrate. And some of the children's book illustrators said, some of the pages were too painful, and so they tried to choose the more innocuous ones about where the children came from or what the ages were. But this is very much a composite. It's very much a mosaic. And what we are trying to do is to create a general impression of the children overall, because when people got into the black and white declarations of the individual children, that's when people were calling me on the phone crying, including, there was a comics book that also came out, and these comics book illustrators who are like well known and very well respected, they're like, I can't do this. This is just breaking my heart. And so this was intended to make it kinder and gentler by, creating a more thematic presentation of the population of children overall.
There's a really instructive section about the children talking about their hoped for destinations and lives, and who they would like to end up with and where they'd like to go. You referenced this a bit earlier, Michael Garcia Bohannock. How many of the people arriving at the border have family already in the United States?
Nearly all of the ones that we interviewed, and that's not unusual in the population. I mean, in particularly in the time period that we were talking about, most of these children were coming from, and today still are, from Guatemala, from Honduras, from El Salvador, countries that have a lot of historic ties to the United States and have received, that have sent people to the U.S. as refugees in the last generation or two. And so it's not uncommon for people to have even parents, but often aunts and uncles, grandparents, cousins, other relatives in the United States who are ready and willing and able to care for them today.
Has there been any long-term follow-up or the ability to have that follow-up with the specific people you talked to, the 61 kids in Clint in 2019? Were you able to trace them from there, Warren?
No, it's really important for us to understand that our contact with the children is normally just that one point in time, that you know the attorneys who represent these children only represent them in the Flores case for the period of time that they're in detention, and that it's very critical for once the children are released from detention to be connected with pediatric experts, so you know medical experts and legal experts who can help them on their journey here in the United States to present their case to remain and to receive the trauma-informed care that they need as children. And so it's not our role to follow up for them. We're not the ones who represent them in their asylum proceedings normally. We have on occasion received calls from, you know, parents or families who have follow-up questions and you know, but we're not their attorneys. And so it's important for us to respect that we were asked to interview the children at this one point in time to capture what they had experienced in the days or weeks or months since they arrived in the United States and to present that information to the court, and that once they are released, that's when our role ends.
So 61 children and a mosaic of voices in the book Hear My Voice, which very much looks like a children's book, but probably not what you'd want your younger child to read alone. It is the testimonies of children detained at the southern border of the United States, compiled by Warren Binford for Project Amplify. She's our guest on The Exchange with Michael Garcia Bohannock, both children's rights attorneys. We'll come back to the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking about people coming across the southern border with Mexico into the United States. In this case, children. A lot of them are coming over the border now, but it is the situation of 2 years ago that is captured in the book Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz. It's both in English and in Spanish. Looks like a kid's book, big, bold artwork, not that many words, but it's a way to really get in a hurry the essence of what children were experiencing at the border stations, like the one in Clint, Texas in 2019, where Warren Binford and Michael Garcia Bohannock interviewed the young people. It is their stories compiled in the book. You can join the conversation on The Exchange with Warren Binford and Michael Garcia Bohannock at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The afterword in the book is yours, Warren, after the stories from the kids. And we've only grazed on this so far, the Flores Agreement, but let's illuminate it more fully and talk about what it is and why it's so important here.
Yeah, so basically what happened was in 1985, an attorney in Los Angeles discovered that there was a young girl, Jenny Lizette Flores, who was being kept in an abandoned hotel behind razor wire with unrelated adults by the INS, that her family came forward to try and take her from this abandoned hotel, and the U.S. government wouldn't release her. And so this attorney partnered with one of my mentors at a national children's rights organization, and they brought a lawsuit on behalf of Jenny Flores, as well as there was another girl in Texas who was being vaginally searched. Jenny was being strip searched. Other children were as well, and subjected to really inhumane conditions. And they brought a lawsuit on behalf of the children, and that lawsuit went all the way up to the Supreme Court and all the way back down again over the course of the next 12 years, until finally the U.S. government sat down with the children's attorneys and said, okay, we will agree. Sometimes the courts would agree with the children, sometimes with the government, until finally the parties came together and said, okay, we'll agree to feed the children. We will agree to give the children clean drinking water. We will agree to care for them in ways that are appropriate for children, taking into consideration the special needs of children, and we'll agree to release them as quickly as possible to their families. Really, really reasonable promises to make, and it was those promises that Michael and I have been going to these facilities to ensure are being kept. Are the children being fed? Are they being given classes access to clean water? Are they being released to their families promptly? And time again, we discovered that they were not, that they were hungry, that they didn't have access to clean water, that they were being made to sleep on concrete ground, that they were being made to sleep in tents out in the desert, that they were being held for, weeks and months and sometimes over a year, when we had seen them to the point that the Border Patrol officials at Clint and elsewhere would pull us aside and said, I'm a dad, I'm a mom, like, these kids don't belong in here. This is not an appropriate place for the kids. You've got to get them out of here. And so it's a situation where even the people on the front lines who are working for the government know that what's happening at the border is wrong and needs to end.
There's a two-page spread that is particularly impactful, and it's actually painted with quotes around the phrases that were given back to the kids when they complained about conditions. You don't belong here. Go back to where you came from. You are pigs. You came here to ruin my country. These were actually said by staffers?
These are actually said by staffers, and it's really, really important, Jeff, for you to understand and for all of your listeners to understand that there are good people everywhere we go. There are good kids, there are good parents, there are good Border Patrol agents, there are good ICE agents, there are good people in ORR. But there are also some really evil things that happen in these facilities, and some of these evil things are systematic, and some of them are coming from, the White House or other, levers of power. And sometimes it's because there's a really hurtful or angry or evil person who's being given access to these children. And time again, we both see acts of kindness by some people in these facilities, people in power in some of these facilities, and sometimes we see true cruelty. And, there's one story about, a guard who, there was a lice infestation at Clint, and the guard brought the girls. There was, 40-something kids in a cell, and it was a situation where he gave the girls two combs, two lice combs, and told them to share them. Now, what's the one thing that you never do when you have a lice infestation?
Share a comb.
Exactly. And yet that's what he did. We all know that Anne Frank did not die in a concentration camp. She died from typhus, from typhoid fever, which is spread by lice. And so for him to do that, and then to come back an hour later, and when the kids could not find one of the combs, he punished them by taking away all of their bedding, by taking away, the bunk beds and, the mats on the floor. The bedding was never glorious anyway, and their Mylar blankets, and he made them sleep, including infants and toddlers, on a concrete floor. And I did not believe that he was really going to follow through with a threat when all of these kids kept coming in from the cell, telling me what was coming down in that cell. And I came back the next morning, and every child that I interviewed from that cell confirmed that this very evil person made even the infants and toddlers sleep on a cold concrete floor that night because a lice comb was lost that he never should have given them in the first place.
Now, as I look at pictures of the situation now, as we talk about this in the spring of 2021 under a different president, different regime, different approach to immigration, I still see some of the same images. You know, the silver blankets, the enclosures with lots of people in them, with not a lot of spare space. I mean, you've communicated that the intentions are different, but that the systems are going to take a while to change. So, I mean, I don't know if you've been down there lately, but is there anything appreciably different from what was going on in what you have in the book?
Well, I think that what is different now is that we can see the direction of travel. If the administration follows through on the promises that it's made, that is already a sea change from what we were seeing under the Trump administration. I think what we really need to confront, though, what the administration has not yet confronted, is the fact that not only should children not be in these facilities for anywhere near the length of time they are, but ideally they should never be in these facilities to begin with, in these kinds of detention cells. And there's a bit of a pathway dependency here that we're doing this because we've always done this, right? Kids arrive, they're caught by border agents, by Border Patrol, and then they're placed in Border Patrol holding cells. Instead of finding some way of, at that point, expeditiously transferring them to something that would be a safe alternative, even if they have to go to a border station for processing, there's no reason why they then have to go to the what we now know is an overstretched, overcrowded Health and Human Services shelter system if their relatives can be quickly located and the due diligence can be quickly done to reunite them. And so starting that process in Border Patrol stations is another obvious step that I think the administration has begun, but there's still quite a long way to go in this regard. So I think what we have right now is indications of a change in approach, and what we need is a complete rethinking of the immigration, the way the immigration and the child protection systems intersect.
What was the term, pathway dependency?
That's right. Yeah,
yeah, that seems to happen a lot in the world, that we've always done it this way, so let's continue to do it this way. Warren Binford, you have done something very different here, though, with Hear My Voice. And granted, this is probably not something you want to have, you know, kids looking at directly, but what is the call to action here? What do you want to see come from this effort?
Well, what I'm really trying to accomplish here is to recenter the public dialogue on the children. That it's critical that we stop politicizing these children and to recognize who they are, why they came here, and to respect their rights to have their voice be heard, to say, this is the reason that I'm here, to have the courts determine whether or not that is a legal reason to be here, a legal reason to stay, and to be treated like children the entire time. And so it's really an effort to shift the public dialogue so that we remember who these children are and that they are just children.
Michael, we've watched in recent years as countries wrestled with whether or not to take in refugees. You know, the Trump administration said we're full. Italy refused to take any more people crossing the Mediterranean on small and rickety boats. I mean, for one thing, are just more people generally moving now? And given the general state of the world politically and climatically, is there any reason to expect less movement?
Well, there's no reason to expect less movement, but I don't think it's right to say that more people are moving now than at any other time before. I mean, the numbers get skewed every so often by the expected things, major conflict, by natural disaster, by man-made disaster, by those sorts of things. But most of those people who are affected stay as close as possible to their home, to their former homes, and that's something we see again and again, which is that people try as hard as they can to do everything they can to stay in their home country before, often for years, before they finally give up and go somewhere else. And once they do, then of course they'll choose the place they think offers them the best combination of a family support network or a community support network, a future for their children, the possibility of providing for their children, all of these obvious things that I think all of us think about in terms of where we live, but that's not necessarily, it's not the destination that's driving them. It's the insecurity and the targeted threats that, that we keep seeing as driving them. But I think what's the other thing that's really useful to remember is that even at their worst, the governments you're talking about, the Trump administration and other governments that have really tried to restrict access by refugees to their territories, have never disavowed the premise that people get to cross the border, including irregularly, including without inspection, in order to seek safety. Right? The idea of having some protection for refugees is a longstanding concept. It exists even though countries have, in other respects, very, very significant say over who they let in and who they do not let in at their borders. And no government has really, no credible government has ever really questioned that fundamental premise. That fundamental premise that was developed in large part with the influence of the United States in the drafting of these legal treaties and other documents.
So, Warren Binford, in our last 2 minutes, how do we move forward? It's possible that even some of the people moved by the stories in Hear My Voice, Escucha Mi Voz, will still believe it is not on the United States to take in people suffering in other lands.
Well, there's no question that we have laws in the United States that we have committed to, including recognizing the right of people to come to the United States, including children, to seek safety. And we need to respect the laws of the United States in treating these children humanely while they present those claims. And to those who are concerned on the other side who want to see permanent legal protections with regard to the humane treatment of the children, what they need to do is absolutely elect public leaders who respect children's rights, who respect treating children humanely, and that we then need to hold those public leaders accountable to that value. There is currently legislation in Congress, in the United States Senate, that can move forward to establish permanent legal protections for these children around such basic things as giving the children sufficient food and access to clean water. And the members of Congress say the only way that that legislation will move forward is if the American people call for it. And so my hope is that we can change the course of history. We can end the systematic abuse of children coming to the United States. It doesn't mean that all of them have the legal basis to stay here. But regardless of whether they have a right to stay or not, during that process, when they are in government care, they need to have the rights respected. And that's what I'm asking the American people to call for, is to just treat these children right, treat them in accordance with our law, and make sure that that law is clear.
The book is called Hear My Voice, The Testimonies of Children Detained at the Southern Border of the United States. Flip it over, and it is Escucha Mi Voz, Los Testimonios de los Jóvenes Detenidos en la Frontera Sureña de los Estados Unidos. So obviously available in both languages. It is something you probably want to make sure if a kid is reading it, you're reading it with them as an adult. Compiled by Warren Binford from Real Testimonies from Kids at a Border Station in 2019. Michael Garcia Bohenick was there as well. Warren Binford is at Willamette University in Salem, the founder of Project Amplify. Michael Garcia Bohenick, the senior counsel in the Children's Rights Division of Human Rights Watch. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
All right, take care.